Jordan, come on, over you are. Jordan, come on. How do you say your last name, Jordan?
Streisning.
Say it again.
Streisning.
Streisning. That wasn't hard. Come on, Jordan.
Hello. Hi, everyone. I'm Jordan Streisning. I have four poems for you. I have a good mix of depressing and less depressing. What? Oh, shoot. How depressing do you want it? Because I have like a spectrum. All right, hang on. Let's see. Okay, sure. I'll pick a real depressing and a kind of depressing. This one is called Blue. The cold steel ducked beneath his skin as if to hide from the news. Feeling blue, she sits by the phone. Leaving home, he told her he'd do it alone. The doctor's voice doesn't crack with the smack of the word cancer. Jaded breath still flowing, in and out. But a beat, his heart throbs sound, doesn't pound like the sound of her babies. The talk of the clock hits hard as a rock. Every tick that it talks makes her heart want to stop as she sits absent-minded alone. The phone sings, her mind rings, hello. More tests, let it rest. With quickened breath, she protests, there's no way that this could be true. He cries on the phone, feeling sick and blue. Bald is beautiful, especially on babies and him. He says to she says, and she says to he that when waters get rough, you just have to swim. Both silently fearing his body won't win. While calm doctors measure the life in his blood, count cells, red, white, and indifferent. Her bare knees hit the porch, scrape raw against splintered hardwood, paint ragged and weathered. It peels to reveal the rough interior, while above the sky grumbles and growls. The owl takes flight each night to hunt the blue jay, who finds a way to sing somehow. Okay, I'll end with a happy one, because now I'm depressed. This one's called Inspiration Has No Respect. Inspiration has no respect for your schedule. It doesn't knock first and enter later, or apologize for keeping you up all night. It doesn't kiss the back of your hand politely upon first meetings, but yanks you, kicking and screeching your life to a halt. It pinches you at night, won't be quiet at dawn, doesn't care if your contacts aren't in yet or the light isn't on, because inspiration will seize you just when you didn't want to be shook. Slap you hard and walk away, not even pay a second look, and it's inconvenient, it's rude, it pushes and it shoves when the dishes need doing and the homework's piling up. It rips at your itinerary, grabs you by the cuff, but it's okay, because inspiration knows I like it rough. Thank you.
Thank you, Jordan. Thank you. Priscilla Barry, correct?
I'm calling Barry, but I usually just go by Rochelle.
Priscilla, okay, Rochelle.
All right. Can everyone hear me? Maybe? Okay. So, this first poem, I find that we often write about our obsessions, and one of my obsessions, CM Punk, was in town last night, so this is a poem I wrote for him. Chicago made punk. There is no salute from John Cena tonight because John Cena is in enemy territory. Jerry the King Lawler. On a sultry night in CM Punk's hometown, he sat in the middle of the ring like a rock star lighting up the stage. Punk, your plan was to do the most devious thing a superstar ever would. To take the WWE title and run from the company. You didn't like the management situation and you wanted the title, the centerpiece of the organization. John Cena, the quintessential company man, stood across the ring from you, soldier-like, ready to defend his title. WWE chairman Vince McMahon tried to disqualify you, calling for the submission bell when you wouldn't give up. Cena, prizing honor instead, had words with Vince, just long enough for you to recover and put him to sleep. 8 days later, you returned, pipe bomb in hand, and we knew Chicago wasn't the end. It was the birthplace of your reinvented self. You came back with traces of jerk in your character. Most importantly, you came back to be a game changer. My second one was something that I was thinking about the summertime, and I wrote this for my mom and her significant other. Ode to a Lake Erie, ode to a late July Erie night. From the back of the beach, I can hear the waves, how they wash, and the sound of the bonfire where I sit with my family in the sand, playing games of Princess Uno in Phase 10. The light from the fire flashing across the cards, the family for once not yelling and backbiting, but instead drinking Mike's hard lemonade by the bottleful. Thank you.
It's okay. Sometimes I don't care. I'd like to stand. Let me stand. First of all, thanks, Jimmy. And welcome home, Joan. Where are you?
Right over there.
Welcome home. Hi. This is a little change of pace. One of my favorite poets is Osip Mandelstam. He was a great Russian poet at the beginning of the early part of the 20th century. He wrote some very scathing poetry against Stalin. For that, he was exiled, and finally, he ended up going to Siberia, where he died of a heart attack. I've written two poems in his memory. We won't have time for me to read his poem, which is a blockbuster. The first one is called Exiled. Exile is a way of life that labels its convict with a badge on a stripe-ridden shirt of parchment that reeks of doctrine, that forges stories into chains, language into symbols that bear nothing of worth, but stir perhaps a remnant, the warm smell of being that hides in a heart, preserving its passion. Buried in effigy in a cattle car that crawls to the island of Siberia through fields of rotted grain. This one is called Mandelstam. And I think you have to know that he wrote of Stalin as the Kremlin mountaineer. It cost him his life eventually. Mandelstam. There must rampage an enormous swath, trawling humans in the fashion of the times, trawling blood-mixed rain. In the end, each bloated cell bursts red, redder than the setting sun, and soft and warm against the tongue of the Kremlin mountaineer. And warm and soft, black ink drips red against his papular tongue, against his black wet rain. Incandescent words raise from the face of a decimate page inscribed by the amputate arm of Mandelstam's mind, tinged to touch one last bit of bread before the next great purge, a mighty dirge strummed by the quivering dead themselves. O land with lonely grief.
Next week, you bring that other poem. That would be great, if you'd be so kind. It's not like this is poetry police up here, but sometimes we have to kind of keep it, you know, close. Bob Walecki. Where you at, Bob? There you go, Bobby.
hope I don't have a microphone malfunction. I'm just going to read one tonight. It's called We Didn't Say Anything. It was something we didn't talk about what happened to her, because in 2 weeks she'll be fine, blowing her bubblegum bubbles behind someone's head on the bus, smacking them with her teeth and air. She had the longest drive home, living farthest away than any of us. Her first day back from it, all week, she'd fall asleep. And I watched as we drove away from ninth grade, all those long highway trees stretching, unfolding in the clear glass above my window seat, further and further out. No road signs leading to her road, the country houses connected to each other, occasional and endless, by cables of spiraling black, telephone lines, shining, wet. The cord that held her words that day, when she finally spoke about it to a friend, about what happened, she said it was for the best. I wouldn't have been a good mother. Thank you.
I'm a stander for sure. Hi, I'm Angela, mad woman practicing. Stark, raven, mad. Authorities found him stumbling down St. Charles, dressed in a stranger's clothes, unkempt and haggard, ranting and raving. Edgar Allan Poe went utterly insane at the age of 40. The poet died 2 days later. His family clueless to his whereabouts or demise. Medical records lost. They speculate the cause of death was from epileptic brain damage. They buried him in a cheap, unmarked coffin. She awoke in her dark alley to a familiar call. The falling Baltimore snow revealed the taunting crow's cousin. The inner harbor silent, apart from the Chesapeake Bay breeze, blowing a Believe poster across sidewalks, littered with needles, crack pipes, butts, and broken glass. She smirked and pondered, believe in what? Taverns long past closed, garbage trucks not yet moving, brick buildings shield the howling wind. Not far off, a rat scurries toward a trash pile. She named him Joseph. Tallying violent tales led her to perform worse gestures. She outwit muggers by pretending to be a psycho bag lady. Tricking criminals began as a playful game to be safe on the streets. But alas, a craziness emerged from her act. That night, an ebony plurk, plurk, plurk turned her around on the cobblestone. The raven summoned evermore, 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 luring her to the Westminster Hall and burial ground. She entered the graveyard. A chilling emerald spirit flew past. The bird of lore perched on Edgar Allan Poe's headstone and croaked evermore. Fiery foul eyes enchant Poe's epitaph. Here at last he is happy, cracked her up, and she cackled with the ominous croaking blade in a Plutonian cackle, centigraph hysteria. The seizure, she succumbed to the seizure, a grim trickster's beak clucked. She fluttered her neck feathers, beady vision sharp. Her velvet arms flap rustled into flight. Wings flapped, wild wings glided gracefully, sinister broad tail steered. She curled her toe talons and made an acrobatic dive, cleverly landing next to the raven, cawing ever more madly on Poe's marker. The cemetery caretaker found her, nearly frozen to death and delusional, on top Poe's tomb. Doctors brought her back to life, treated her frostbitten flesh. Yet her heart beats irregular, her mind caverns squawk madly evermore. The poet never completely recovered from going stark raven mad.
I want to thank Joan and Jimmy and Heather for a great evening tonight, and also Bob and Angie for those concrete images. You won't find any in this poem, but maybe in another one. This is called Maybe We Can. Nature, spick and span, polished for poems. Trees, plants, and unblemished birds, as if there are no mistakes. No mutations, no monsters. Not long ago, poets perked up to oppose the politics in Poland, stood steadfast staring apartheid directly in its evil eyes. Microscopes mine the endless beauty of leaves and flowers. Maybe we poets can pause to perceive the strip mining of possibility by privilege. Can we? Can we? Thank you.
I'm afraid to touch this microphone from last week.
Okay. It broke last week. All right. The title of this poem is Crescent Moon. And a crescent moon is a moon of growth, clearing, throwing out of what you don't need. And this poem is dedicated to someone who is growing to be a friend of mine. Fresh thoughts of you, like that first sip of morning coffee. Again, I walk back in at the bar. I ignore those voices, the rational ones that imbibe what is right, pacing between the hope that you were and wishing you were not sitting there in crinkled eyes, convincing blue reminders of how could I miss you again. Wells up inside summer sandals, a remembering night when the toe of a crescent moon presses against the thought.
Hello. It seems like it's getting louder out there to me, so I'm going to try to be really loud to combat it. I just have one poem. This is called What is Sweet? On Patronizing the Homophobic Donut Shop. She and I went into peace, love, and little donuts Sunday, all set to gay it up. The line was nearly out the door. Smell of hot oil pulsed the air around the tie-dyed sign. I cared nothing for the rush of powdered sugar. It all happened so fast. The space between the counter and wall was garishly small. Tiny, sweet donuts, erotic with sprinkles, glistened. Diverse, miniature sugar sculptures lined up on steel trays. So many colors, so many flavors, rapid spoken orders of maple glaze, cinnamon, sugar, butter, cookie, cheesecake, fried dough, 1 dozen, 2 dozen, assaulted me, some with erect cherries, maraschino shining from their centers. We could not compete. All I could do was loop my arm around her waist, which was not profane, and hold her hand afterward in the bright, busy sunlight. And this was also not profane, nor the way we'd tasted each other the night before, or the raw curve of her back onto which that morning my eyes had opened. No, nor now the way we sit at this coffee shop table, blowing to cool our unlidded cups, in silent, sweet disappointment of being absolutely plain bodies we touch, try not to burn our tongues. Thanks.
Got it? Lucille? Adjust the microphone as you want, Lucille. How
to design a poncho. Can everyone hear me?
Is you this move the mic a little closer for you.
Oh right? Dear, no. I can't.
There you go. There you go. You'll be all right.
Isn't it too high?
No, oh, that's perfect. That,
okay. How to design a poncho. I know you always wanted to make a poncho. I know you always wanted to make a granny square poncho, so I will tell you how. First you wait for an attack of temporary insanity. Then you choose 15 colors, which no one in her right mind would put in the same garment. Don't worry about this. You are the greatest fiber artist this world has ever known and will be able to make it work. You are probably a genius. 1 year later, you have completed over 350 granny squares. It is a hot Sunday afternoon in mid-August. A lot of people take naps on Sunday afternoon. You lay out all those squares on your bedroom rug in the shape of your poncho. Finally, your design is complete. You can't believe your eyes. It is the ugliest thing you have ever seen. You have been crawling around on your hands and knees for 7 hours, and your back is killing you. Your cat comes in to see what you are up to. She has heard you talking. She slinks to the center of your poncho, begins to wash herself. Soon, she will curl up for a nap. You pick up all those squares, put them in a big white plastic garbage bag and ram it into the corner of the closet shelf. Maybe you will give it to the Salvation Army. You wouldn't wear it to a dog fight. Your back still hurts. It is a week before you can stand upright. Yes, it is Sunday, hot again like last week. You lay out the granny squares. It is still ugly. You remove the brown and yellow, the variegated brown and violet. You decide to have a cold glass of lemonade. Put your feet up. Maybe in heaven you will be rewarded for your perseverance. Hundreds of grannies are resting on the closet shelf, and 12 years have passed. You are starting from scratch. We'll need almost 500 more squares, mostly rose and red. You're really good at this, even designing stuff in your sleep. Evening gowns with ruffles, floor-length coats, more ponchos, dresses with 4 sets of detachable sleeves.